Astonishing Legends Network.
The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library.
Madam, are you really going through with tonight's reading?
Oh, indeed I am, Mr. Darling. Our guests crave such ghastly topics. I do, however, detect a note of disdain in your voice regarding the subject.
Well, I'm not as repulsed by this subject as I am by bog bodies. But I have to admit, it does give me the heebie-jeebies.
Darling, you deal with the dead all the time. You create them.
I devour them, madam. I do not dance around with them in my quarters. I'm a monster, not a ghoul.
All right. Duly noted. Greetings, everyone. Please come through. Oh, how wonderful to see you. Oh, my stars. Some of you are attired in all black. Oh, you grim little flirts. I love you so much. Please hurry in and get the best seat of your choice. Go on. Oh, dear. The wolf pups will soon have their hair all over those beautiful black threads. Oh, well. They'll be even more beautiful. Oh, Ms. Fernanda. You look incredible. And eerie. Is this a bridal gown? It's from the junk in the trunk thrift store in the village. Oh, you intuitive thing. Irma, come here. Be a good girl and carry Ms. Fernanda's bridal tray nicely, okay? Not with your teeth, Irma.
Welcome to the Midnight Library, my dear guests. I am your hostess of unholy matrimony, Miranda Merrick. Well, since you've taken the initiative and embraced tonight's very dark marriage theme, I'm pleased to tell you that the hospitality tray has some nuptial-themed nibbles for you. With a fun twist. Well, we think it's fun. You see, the entire tray is laid out like a massive, yet miniature, graveyard. And you will have to dig up whatever treats you can with the tiny little diminutive shovels and pitchforks. Under the mock soil surface, which I think is, crushed up Oreos, I guess. You'll find petite wedding cakes, definitely deceased entrees, and little coffins full of buttermint bones. Why?
Everybody.
Why do you have to dig it all up? This will become more clear as we move along through our reading tonight, my guest. Buckle up, lovelies. My dear guests, in order to avoid being perceived as so rude as to ask anyone here to reply out loud, I will pose my opening question rhetorically. And my question is, Do you believe in fate? Specifically, do you entertain the karmic idea that there's someone out there for everyone, as they say? One specific person with whom you are destined to be with. No matter who they are or the condition they're in. A love just meant for you. A love without conditions. A love without boundaries. A love without permission. You may not want to nod so enthusiastically, no matter how tempting such romantic destinies may sound, because this is one ghoulish story of someone who did believe in such a fateful love. Let's dive in, shall we? There was no place for the living here on this blackest of nights. All of the cemetery was alive with souls which came out of their graves from all sides, moving and thronging all around us. It was indeed like a festival among the departed, as they moved up on all sides. It was like a great divine wedding march for me taking place. It could not have been a funeral march, for all seemed happy and joyful and interested in silent admiration, watching as the white forms of angels filed past, with Elena and me in their midst. They were everywhere. None blocking our way, but all of them melting out of our way. It seemed as if they had never seen such a celebration in this cemetery before. It was as if all were delighted and desirous to help us. The little cart, for all its weight, seemed almost to run by itself. It responded to the slightest touch of my hand, which gave me the impression of being aided by friendly hands reaching out of the ground. Carl Tanzler, April of 1933. First, a good foundational introduction is mandatory for this chilling story, my lovelies. So let me fill out for you, as briefly as possible, the life path of the person known as Carl Tanzler, who was born to an upper-middle-class family in Germany in 1877, and was, by all accounts, a bright child. Although he was strange, and said to be taken with beliefs about visions from other realms and messages from a particular and peculiar ancestor. More on this shortly. Carl's youth and young adulthood were spent in Germany, although it is known that he traveled to other countries and studied a great deal as he matured into his 20s and 30s. Now, those with the keenest ears and powers of focus among you will have noticed that I do not make it a steady habit to mention war very often in these readings. That is, not unless the subject is a vital component of a story. Reason being, I detest war, killing, and political violence. Although I will admit that at times, war has been a necessary course of action to prevent further carnage. This being said, war is a brief element in Mr. Tanzler's story. Young adult Carl Tanzler had an interest in sailing, shipbuilding, and homesteading, even going so far as to take up residence on an island of Australia. When the war started in 1914, Carl was thought of as dangerous, and was kept as a prisoner of war in an internment camp, along with other German citizens on the Australian mainland. Karl was later held in a higher security camp when he was captured trying to escape off the coast of Australia in a homemade ship he had secretly built. By this time, he also had interest in and studied anatomy, electricity, and engineering. So you can see, the man was, at his core, industrious. In 1918, at the close of the war, he was forbidden from moving back to his homeland of Germany, and chose alternatively to go to the Netherlands. He would have been roughly 39 or 40 at this time, so very much an adult. In the Netherlands, he fell in love with a woman named Doris, married her, and had two daughters. The end. Not a chance. No, about those curious visions. From his youth to his adulthood, Karl Tanzler had no reservations about telling those around him that he was receiving messages, personal and meaningful messages, during both waking states and wild dreaming, all from a certain woman. And not just any run-of-the-mill woman, either. Karl was seeing spectral visions and being shown futuristic things about his life by the Countess of Kozel, also known as Anna Constantina von Brockdorf, who was at one time a real person. The Countess was also a distant and long-dead relative of Karl Tanzler. The daughter of a knight, Anna the Countess of Kozel, whom you can see illustriously painted oil portraits of, had been dead since 1765. But she had been vividly appearing with messages for Karl since the late 1800s and into the early 1900s or 20th century. And Karl became obsessed with her and the visions she so dazzlingly presented to him. I will freely admit here that it is unclear as to whether the Countess appeared to him as a different woman with specific facial features and lustrous dark hair, or if she had revealed the appearance of this specific woman unto herself. But in any case, he carried the image of the woman shown to him in the visions in his mind and burned it into his memory. She was to be his true love, his ideal mate, the one and only for him. And not to complicate this, but I do want you to know that Karl was so taken by the visions gifted to him by his dead and distant relative that he began using her name and title as his, referring to himself and insisting others call him Karl von Kozel or Count von Kozel, which apparently they all went along with and did. Funny but still not funny, I could not find any notes on his wife's reaction to this, but he may have done this name switcheroo before they were married. What I did find is that at some time after 1926, Karl's mother advised him to move his family to Florida, which he did. and shortly after he began working as an X-ray technician in the Marine Hospital in Key West, Carl abandoned his family, moved a good distance away from them, and never returned. No, I know what you're thinking. I always do. No further comment on that. But some of you, I know, wonder why on the goddess's green earth would he do such a thing, deserting his family like that? Well, here, my lovelies, is where our story takes that dreary but enticing downturn you've been so patiently waiting for. One day in 1930, whilst working away shooting X-ray beams through broken legs and disjointed necks, a young woman arrived at the Key West Hospital. Her name was Maria Elena Milagro de Hoyos, a striking, sassy-looking flapper-style girl. And she was wearing the face of the true love from Carl's lifelong love visions. So, it is believed that not long after meeting her, Doris and the girls got the boot. To say that Carl Tanzler, or Count von Kozel, fell madly in love with the popular Key West beauty Elena would be a tremendous understatement. She was just 21 years old, and Carl was 53, 6 years older than Elena's own father. Young Elena was also already married since the age of 17, although she was estranged from her young husband. She was also suffering from the increasingly ill effects of tuberculosis. But to Carl, Elena, with her pale skin, dark eyes, and dark wavy hair, was the literal woman of his dreams. Carl Tanzler's obsession was said to be so intense for unwell Elena that he saw himself as her personal doctor and her savior. He tended to her, worried over her, studied up on new and fringe-type treatments, and concocted new medications for her, even going so far as to attempt electroshock therapy on her to try to jolt her congested lungs into clearing. He also showered her with gifts, pricey jewelry, and nice new clothing. It should be boldly noted here that young Elena tolerated his over-the-top attentions, but she was in no way in love with him. Carl became close with the young woman's family as well, being her sisters and parents. Very close, in fact. Always doing more impressive and helpful things for them, and especially Elena, to the point of constantly visiting her in her home to care for her even more. But sadly, at this early time for this terrible disease, there really wasn't any tried and true treatment or cure for tuberculosis. Some treatments worked for some people who improved and lived for years. Others, no matter the treatment, just died. On October 25th of the very next year, 1931, young Elena passed away. Many, many people attended the heartbreaking funeral for Elena, during which she was lowered into the ground in a simple casket. Soon afterward, thunderstorms and torrential rains pelted the area. Carl, in his devastated grief, was sure Elena's resting body was being damaged by the soaking in of the excess rainwater. And it was. He offered to pay for and requested that her family allow him to have an extravagant tomb, an above-ground mausoleum built for her. And they agreed. But this would take time. In the meantime, Carl, in league with the local mortician, and unbelievably, the approval of the local authorities, gained permission to exhume Elena, to check on and attend to any desecration done to her body by the intrusion of stormwater. Speaking of tombs, tonight's reading in the Midnight Library is brought to you by the League of Lady Gravediggers. This evening's tale is one that comes with a question warning. Have you considered your corpse might be at risk from those in mourning? Are you so alluring and so spellbinding that even when unalive, some heartsick ghoul might dig you up and force you to revive? The League of Lady Gravediggers has just the deal for you. They'll bury you 12 feet deep down and seal your crypt with goo. Your grave will reek for miles around, the stench they'll not withstand. Safe from every 10-foot pole and every ghoulish hand. The ladies have tubs of swamp goo, just festering, fetid, and waiting. They'll dip your corpse and casket in it to prevent any afterlife dating. Stay safe, stay buried, and eternally enticing and attractive. The ladies will certainly protect you from being a carnal captive. Stay entombed, don't get exhumed. Call the League of Lady Gravediggers at 976-DITCH-WITCHES. Results not guaranteed. Some strains of swamp goo may be unpredictably corrosive. No refunds, redos, or backsees for complete disintegration. That's 976-DITCH-WITCHES. Perhaps at this point, we should have a brief note on the practice of necrophilia. Necro, meaning dead or of the dead, and philia, meaning affection, fondness, or tendency toward or for. Necrophilia is the love of the dead, or the desire to be near them, like right up tight, close to dead people. And in most instances, if it is spoken of as a human tendency, the psychology will state that the person suffered from necrophilia, meaning that they were helplessly attracted to those who are or were dead. And as if this wasn't unsettling enough, I guess we have to go nearly the opposite direction here and say that Carl, Count von Kozel, didn't seem to be suffering at all from his bout with necrophilia. The Count seemed to be very much dead set as it were, on and content with and happily determined to eventually be in the company of the very much deceased Elena. Carl, in a twist, was obsessed with her. The fact that she was dead was merely a facet of her being, a minor inconvenience. He didn't love her because she was dead. He loved her in spite of it. So for nearly 2 years, whilst her tomb was being designed and built, Carl began preparing his home for Elena. All while, and hold on to your pointy hat for this, all while sleeping in her bed at her parents' home. You heard me correctly. The Count was still working at the hospital, working on making future accommodations for the deceased Elena in his home, and spending each night in her bed in her parents' home, because he proclaimed that it, the bed, was imbued with the scent of her. And her parents permitted it, as he paid them $5 a month for the privilege, which, believe it or not, was a considerable sum at the time. When finally finished to his liking, the expensive and roomy white stone crypt, which was tall enough to walk inside of and had within it a coffin bier, or a raised platform that held a new ornate coffin aloft. The new coffin was fitted inside of an outer metal coffin. And unbelievably, Carl had a phone installed inside of the mausoleum. A phone that only he could call. Carl also visited the tomb of Elena compulsively, spending hours on end seated outside of it. He did this for months, with visitors and passers-by reliably seeing him there. Carl alone also possessed the tomb's only key. In Carl von Cosel's writings, he clearly states that Elena loved her little house that he had constructed for her. He knew this because he could hear her speaking to him from inside of her casket, contained in the fancy mausoleum. And he always responded to her by speaking into the outer casket's valve near the base of it. When Elena asked him if this was his house too, he sheepishly explained that it was not. Carl then wrote that it was Elena who requested that they should be residing in the same house. And upon hearing this from her, Carl was elated to tell her that he had been preparing his home for just the occasion. On the next moonless night, with a little cart loaded down with blankets and ropes, Carl, the Count Cosel, stole Elena's body from the mausoleum. He single-handedly dragged her coffin onto the cart, wrapped it up in blankets, and affixed a large crucifix onto the top. Wheeling the corpse in darkness through the darkened roads, and finally moved her into his home to live with him there, happily ever after. At least for a while, anyway. When Carl Tanzler was no longer seen loitering by Elena's tomb, the people who had witnessed him faithfully residing there assumed his grief had subsided, as did Elena's parents, since he abruptly stopped spending his nights in their house to sleep in her bed. For more than 7 long years, Carl Tanzler, or Count von Kozel, bathed, dressed, slept with, dined with, spoke to, sang to, read to, and even danced with the deceased body of Elena de Hoyos. He believed that she loved him as he loved her. He believed her to be his wife. Just how it all unraveled specifically is uncertain. But in 1940, there were rumors for sure. Some say it was a group of children peeking into the Count's low windows who saw him awkwardly waltzing around the room with the dead girl clutched in his arms. In any case, Nana, Elena's sister, was informed that Elena might not actually be inside of her elaborate crypt anymore. And Nana had to know if it was true. She gathered both officials and Carl in the graveyard and demanded that the outer coffin be opened so that she could see her sister in the inner coffin that was inside of it. At this point, Carl actually caved and told her he could prove that her sister was safe and at rest. Unbelievably, in earnest, Carl Count Kozel casually took the group to his house and showed them Elena, at rest, preserved in death, lying on their bed. No one could believe their eyes, especially Elena's sister. There before them was what looked something like Elena. Her body was dressed in the style of clothing she would have worn. The body was the right height, and the hair looked bright. It's been stated that when Carl lamented to Elena's mother that the stormwater damage had caused Elena's hair to fall out, and he offered to replace it with an expensive wig, that she, unbelievably, provided him with long tresses of Elena's hair that was clipped and saved when she first became ill. But the face of deceased Elena was alarmingly odd, as were her hands. Years before, when Carl and the mortician first exhumed her body, Carl was permitted to be alone with it several times, during which it is said he began making repairs to it by applying chemicals, patching it with cloth, and drying and redressing it. When he achieved the goal of moving the dead girl into his home, Well, that's when the real work began. He doused her body with disinfectants, strong perfumes to mask the ever-present stench of decomposition. He filled her collapsing rib cage and rotted abdomen with plumping rags and wrapped her skeletal arms and legs in long windings of cloth to mimic their original musculature, then sealed them over with slatherings of plaster of Paris. Piano wire was ran through drilled holes in her bones to keep all of her joints flexible, and he entirely reformed her once beautiful face that had drastically decayed with layers of thick, flesh-colored wax. Then he removed her shriveled eyes, replacing them with staring glass replicas. For those wondering, yes, there are photos. Now, there are simply too many details and rumors to list for you this night, my lovelies. But Carl Tanzler, or Count von Kozel, was arrested and detained for psychiatric evaluation, which, amazingly, he was found to be competent enough to stand trial. The preliminary hearing took place very quickly, the second week of October 1940, and Carl was said to have calmly and matter-of-factly stated that the deceased young woman was his wife, and he had promised to care for her in death. Then the charges were dropped, as the often frustrating statute of limitations had run out. I can't believe I'm telling you this next part. Carl, whom much of the public actually sympathized with, then became a kind of local celebrity and was seen as a romantic eccentric. He was welcomed at clubs and events, often speaking of his life and times with his deceased wife. This, in itself, is horrific. But like something out of cringy horror fiction, Elena's Frankenstein body was then put on display and the public was invited in to view the poor woman. Over 6,800 people, children included, stood in line waiting for the chance to walk up to and stare at her cobbled together corpse. Carl then had the audacity to ask officials if he could just have it back. And thankfully, they refused. It is said that Elena's makeshift remains were disassembled and arranged inside of a small metal casket and then buried in secret in an unmarked grave. I'm sure you can guess why. Good goddess. Now, on somewhat of a lighter closing note, I am willing to tell you that if you are one who finds this highly unusual, ghoulish tale endlessly compelling, well, I can recommend to you the book I've referenced for much of tonight's reading, much of which is direct excerpts from Carl Tanzler's own journals. Now, This book is not part of the larger compendium of books we have here on necromancy. Those you cannot access, of course. But if you would care to jot down the title, it is Undying Love, subtitled The Shocking True Story of a Passion That Defied Death, published by Ben Harrison in 1997.
Blah, 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 blah.
Hmm?
Blah, 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 blah.
Hmm. What's that, R. Jamie?
Blah, 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 blah.
What's on the cover? Oh, what a good question. On the cover of the book I'm recommending, there is a real photo of Carl Tanzler looking, well, elderly, while lovingly but oddly holding a very large photo of the beautiful Elena de Hoyos when she was very much alive, and not at all resembling that ruined fresco painting from a few years back. Which, relatedly, you may like to know that there are 18 photos included in the book. My personal copy will likely be given away to one of our devout patrons. You know who you are, and you know where to be. Good night, my dear guest. Good night. Well, you seem to have color in your furry cheeks, darling. So, the reading wasn't too icky for you.
What was that?
The reading. Not too disturbing for you, right?
Yes, I'd love to go for a bite.
Do you have earbuds in?
A guest lent them to me, and now I can't get them out.
Well, tomorrow you are going to the vet.
What pet?
The vet. I'll take you first thing.
Yes, it is Shake Your Groove Thing. I didn't think you could hear it. Madam?
Let's show the world we can dance.
This message is for you, my dear guest. It's important to me that you know that you are welcome and valued here. Why? Because I know that you are a real person. And I'd like you to know that in spite of what you may hear in the village, that I am a real person too. I am not an AI-generated thing, pieced together by robbing the work of others, and presented by a soulless algorithm, meant to spew a random flood of content at you that only masquerades as quality entertainment. I choose the subjects I think you'll like. I diligently research the topics, using only reputable books and sites. I alone write every single word you hear. I choose each piece of music and every eerie fun sound. I am the Midnight Library. I am the Reading Room. I am every character. I am the Broom and Fang Pub, the fog that floats in the graveyard, and every Lady Gravedigger. And I am honored that you enjoy what I create. So I will ask you to support the Midnight Library, as many of my beloved friends do. Please visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary, and I'll meet you there. Thank you.